This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Today it's Pat and Stu for Glenn. And the Glenn Beck Program is Stu Returns. Woo! How was your time off? Good?
Oh, it was fantastic, Pat. Yeah.
All right, good. Mm-hmm.
Yourself? How was your day off?
They were all fantastic.
Okay, good.
They were
good
awesome. It was great to continue to work.
I feel like I heard from basically every conversation I had while I was off the air was about abortion.
Oh, really?
I mean, at first you're like, it doesn't lead to a lot of comfortable conversations per se, but maybe babies being alive is worth a couple uncomfortable conversations.
That's kind of what I think, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have this weird urge to have babies be alive for longer periods. Huh. Maybe babies could turn into children. And if you know this, Pat, children are our future. So that's important.
That's what I've heard, yeah. Also, a lot of those children are going to be women one day.
You think?
So, yeah.
Do you have any evidence of that?
It does seem to be a women's rights thing to me as well. So we'll get into that and a lot more in 60 seconds. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. He's back on, I guess it's Tuesday because Monday's Memorial Day already.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. A church was defaced in Delaware County, which is that in Pennsylvania? Delaware County? It's in the Philadelphia diocese.
Yeah.
I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Vandals tagged the church with abortion rights graffiti, saying you do not have the right to decide how others lives.
That is a fair point. I've been trying to figure out when others lives for many years. And
you don't have the right to decide now. Yeah. We know that.
I can decide for myself, but I can't put onto others when others lives.
Right.
And that is, I think, the distinction they're looking for in the graffiti.
I mean, when you're writing this, I can understand it when you screw up and speak it live to somebody. But when you're writing it, I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense to add the S there.
It makes a lot of sense to try to do a draft of each project you're going into in the graffiti world.
Yes,
Pat.
If you're going to deface churches.
Right. Go to a bridge first, like under a bridge where no one can see it, and try out your message there. See how it looks. Take a couple steps back. You know, turn your iPhone flashlight on it. Make sure it looks right. Mm-hmm. Then go to the church to deface it.
Then you deface the church.
Right? How many times have we seen, you know, white supremacists screw up a swastika on a church? And then, look, it's just embarrassing.
It's
if you're going to put a swastika on a religious establishment, it's important to understand which way the lines go.
How do you expect people to join your terrorist group?
Exactly.
When you can't even... You can't even spell live.
I honestly think half of these church burnings are just because they screwed up the graffiti and then they were embarrassed about it and just burned the church down.
Just burned it down.
Screw it.
That's really embarrassing.
I don't have science behind that one, but I think might be to blame.
But I think you might be onto something. even at the churches now, we're being attacked for believing in life. And, you know, it seems like life is something that would be okay to believe in. The babies should be born. It'd be okay with most people. And apparently that's not the case in the United States in the year 2019. It's not okay that you believe in life and want babies to live.
Yeah, it was really interesting being off for a few days and talking outside of these walls. Because here we've talked about the life issue for a very long time. And I'm sure you know that if you listen. But it's interesting how that's breaking through as far as the conversation outside now. I think it's one of the big political topics right now.
Yeah.
Which usually means something bad. You know, usually at the end of the day, when a normal political conversation turns into the conversation you're having outside in normal, you know, in normal person-to-person interaction, a lot of times what it turns into is a nonstop politics. Good example of this is the trade issue. You know, like for years and years and years, it was unions and Democrats saying we need tariffs and restrictions on trade, and Republicans saying we don't need tariffs and we don't want restrictions on trade. We want free trade. And that was sort of the wonky sort of think tank debate that went on for a really, really long time. And then Donald Trump has come out and he's obviously much more friendly to tariffs and trade restrictions. And Now it just turned into teams. You see the same people who were arguing unions and we absolutely need these tariffs. We got to stop this free trade stuff. That's all this, you know, crazy voodoo economics and all the stuff that's going on the other side. And And then it, now it's like, well, it's just become people who like Trump back him on it, and people who don't like Trump attack him on it. It's just people have just switched sides. And I think when you define, especially with someone like Trump, who's so good at like taking an issue and owning it, you know, he just mm-hmm. is so he has such an ability to be able to just dominate a conversation. And people, you see it on cable news all the time. They can't agree with anything he says, no matter what it is, even if it's a position they've held for 50 years. They can't agree with him.
Right.
So it just turns into this team thing. And I'm afraid at some level that's happening with abortion here, where, again, like if you look at the polling on abortion, this third trimester abortion, which has been the general focus of this debate, is 84 to 14 against. The American people despise third term abortion. They always have. Everyone knows it's a horrific, horrific thing.
84% of Americans don't agree on the sky being blue.
Yeah. Really, almost
that's
nothing.
Incredible. Number of people to agree.
There's almost nothing in our political debate that is so universal.
You could almost say that's unanimous. That's every right-thinking person in America believes that late-term abortion isn't right.
And that's not, you know, Governor Northam, well, mm-hmm. after they're born, they'll make a decision on whether you keep them alive. It's not even mm-hmm. 5 minutes before birth. It's third trimester. So you're talking, you know, what, month seven. You're like, mm-hmm. month seven. That's way earlier than the types of things that Democratic candidates are involved in. And think about this for a second. You have something that's unpopular with, you know, to the level of 84%. And the Democrats have pulled out 24 candidates, and not one of them right. will say that that's wrong.
Which
not
is,
one of them.
That's staggering.
Staggering. I mean, there is an argument to be made, and people wow. who are pro-choice do make it, in that essentially it's a slippery slope, right? And there's somewhat of an equivalency with, like, the Second Amendment argument. Like, there probably is some sort of common sense restriction on guns that Republicans could get on board on. Every once in a while, you see, like, background checks, and it polls really well. However, you know, most people who really care about the Second Amendment are like, look, I don't want those things because I know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're going to ask for 1 inch, you're going to take a mile, and then you'll take 10 miles, and then you'll take the entire
right
globe.
Now.
And we're seeing it right now. We're seeing what Beto O'Rourke came mm-hmm. out against, all semi-automatic weapons.
Yeah.
Like, these are things that are way beyond what they said they were asking for in the common sense realm just a few months ago. So as a Second Amendment guy, and I'm not a huge gun guy, but I'm a huge Second Amendment guy, I am, and I know you're the same way. I don't want to give 1 inch on any of this stuff because you know they're coming for all of it. So maybe that's the same thing with some people on the abortion argument. They think they're going to come for first trimester abortion. So they defend to the death 5 minutes before, birth abortions. Defend to the death being pretty appropriate here. It's so incredibly unpopular. Second trimester abortions are also incredibly unpopular. I think it's a 37-point gap to the negative on second trimester abortions.
On whether they should be allowed.
Right. Everyone says second and third trimester abortions should be illegal.
The only one that polls well is the first trimester.
It's the first trimester, and it's slightly positive. However, again, like Republicans in general, and Alabama is an exception here, as they were going after basically 6 weeks or so, most Republican states are asking for 20-week abortion bans. That's the typical Republican position.
Interestingly, though, this week there was a poll that said 55% of Americans are in favor of the heartbeat bills. That's amazing, really. You wouldn't to listen to these Democrats. You wouldn't think.
Anyone would
be in favor of the heartbeat bill, but 55%, that's most Americans that as soon as you know there's a heartbeat, you can't have an abortion. And then you look at that, and then you see the stance of all of these candidates on the Democrat side, and it just doesn't add up. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
They can't find one. I mean, this is a party, like, you know, one of the biggest abortion rulings in the Supreme Court was Casey. And, you know, this goes back to, you know, years and years ago now. But now you have a Democratic senator, right, named Casey, same family, and they can't find one candidate to come out. I mean, it used to be that there were pro-life Democrats. This used to be something. And while it was always hard for us to understand, because how can you be on the side of the party that's fighting for unlimited abortions? They still had them. Mm-hmm. Now we're at the point where, like, you can't even enter this race if you happen to be pro-life?
I don't think so.
I don't think you can even enter it.
I don't know if you can enter the Democrat Party if you're pro-life anymore.
I don't see how
there doesn't seem to be any place for a pro-life person in the Democrat Party anymore.
Yeah, and you could say, well, it's just one issue. I agree with them on these other things. And I understand that instinct. But when we're talking about live, I mean, how many millions? 60 million
people. It's like 62 people, million now.
62 million people that should be living aren't, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. of this one policy. It's a pretty big deal. And if you believe, it's a big deal at some level if you're on the left, right? Because you think of it as a cultural issue. You think of it as, well, I mean, I don't think many people actually believe it's women's rights, but it's at least a stand-in for women's rights, right? Mm-hmm. No one cares what you do to your body if it doesn't affect another life. It's only a matter of if another person's rights are affected. But, you know, it's a stand-in for women's rights. It's kind of a generic summary of women's rights, and it's something that they say they need to defend. So at some level, it's important to the left, but it's really more of just a cultural issue. To the right, we're talking about people living and dying. And if you're saying that this is an actual life, it obviously has to be the most important thing, right? If the end of this is 60 million people that should be alive aren't, what other policy has that effect on anything? I mean, you know, we've made this point before, Pat, that we could probably come in here every day and we would bore the hell out of you in the audience. But we could come in here every day and talk about abortion, and our ratings would be like 0.004. However, morally, I could be completely content with that. I can be completely content with that. Because there's no other issue, with the possible exception, and it's a much larger and more difficult road, of just generally speaking capitalism, right? Because capitalism really has ripped billions of people out of poverty, and you can make the argument that it's even more important, I guess. But when you're talking about just a law that could be changed, a ruling that could be changed, that could just protect millions and millions of lives, there's just nothing that competes with abortion. It's the most simple road to keep tens of millions of people, which are also will grow up to be women, will grow up to be minorities, will grow up to be will have different sexual orientations. Many of them probably, you know, just because of the fact that Planned Parenthood just loves to target inner city neighborhoods, probably most of them wind up voting for Democrats. Like, this is an argument in which Republicans are just saying, please, Lord God, let us give you more voters.
Right.
Right.
How many of them would have been out of 62 million people? Could one of them have been another Einstein?
Absolutely.
Could one of them have been another Madame Curie?
Yeah.
Could one of them have cured cancer?
And many of them.
Yes.
And here's the thing. Maybe 10 million of them would have been awful.
Right.
They still should have the chance to be good. Right?
That's right.
They could all be the most annoying. They could all be the people who are programming the robocalls. Like, I don't care if all of them, all 60 million, got into the robocall industry. They still deserve the right to life.
But okay. Yes. All right. Back in 60 seconds. Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, and Stu back from vacation for Glenn this week. Kirsten Gillibrand was talking about abortion yesterday. You know, basic civil rights. Here she was on MSNBC.
What would you say to taxpayers out there who say, look, I support everyone having their own freedoms, but that when it comes to my tax dollars, abortion isn't something that I want to support?
You know, we have a tenet in our Constitution. It's called separation of church and state.
Oh, really?
And I do not believe that is a valid argument. I think that the Hyde Amendment should be repealed, and that we actually need to make sure that women, regardless of their income level, have a basic right to reproductive care. It's about our humanity, and it's about our basic civil rights.
Basic right to reproductive care.
Well, it's in the Constitution, Pat.
Uh-huh.
And when I say in it, I think it's on the back and a fold. It's folded in, on it. So if you open
in
up
invisible
the
ink,
it is.
And
an
I think
invisible
you have to
ink.
Heat it up like they did on what was that? What was that Nicolas Cage movie?
Oh, National Treasure.
Yeah, National Treasure. You got to take a blow dryer, and you got to be really careful though. A little lemon juice on it.
Yep.
And then the blow dryer, and it'll show up.
Amazing. The founders predicted the blow dryer,
right?
Which is, I thought, pretty impressive because they didn't even have a lot of electricity at the time.
I think some of them assumed you could just do it with your hot breath, but then other founders said, no, they're going to invent something eventually where they can dry their hair really quick. I think that'll do the job.
Because separation of church and state, not in the Constitution.
Not in the Constitution.
It was in a letter.
Yes.
Thomas Jefferson.
In 1803, to a Baptist minister in Connecticut. Who was asking about, you know, hey, are we going to be in trouble here with the state because we're not of the state religion? And that's where That's where it came in. So now, you've got to separate. It's a protection against the religion, not the government. You don't have to protect the state from religion.
That's pretty incredible. It's really the exact reverse.
The exact opposite.
Of the way it's talked about now.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that a senator who's running for president is not aware that the separation of church and state is in the Constitution, is not in the Constitution, is pretty stunning in a normal time. With this field, it's not stunning
it's
at all.
Not.
Because they got, I mean, there are 24 candidates up there now. Bill de Blasio getting in while I was on vacation.
You haven't even moved him over on the board yet.
He's still on our on-the-fence list.
I think he's pretty hacked off about that.
But. Yeah. Yeah, that was a big part of his initial press conference. Mm-hmm. Why have I not been moved on the Glenn Beck presidential board? But, you know, the fact that she doesn't even know that. And then you realize when they talk, when people on the left talk about abortion, you just realize they're just saying things that don't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you know, this sort of prenatal, like reproductive health care concept, like there's a reason you have to make up a fake term for it.
Mm-hmm.
We all know it's not reproductive health care. That is not what an abortion is. Reproductive health care might mean making sure you have the right nutrients and vitamins. If you have there's an issue with, morning sickness, reproductive health care. Absolutely. Postpartum depression, reproductive health care. I'm willing to go to any of those. So, I mean, that makes sense. Obviously, the baby itself, whether you're having an internal lady issue, whatever the issue, just killing the baby is not reproductive health. It is
right.
Not. That's not what it is.
Right. Because it's not healthy for the baby. I don't know if people are aware of that. That's not health care. When you're killing someone.
No. I mean, just like, you know, assisted suicide comes around and it's like, well, should people be able to kill themselves? We made the point, it's very difficult to prevent them to. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really like you can make all the laws you want saying you don't kill yourself. What are you going to do afterwards? You find the guy? You're going to give him a ticket after they're dead? Like, generally speaking, it's difficult to stop people from killing themselves. But the reproductive health care, having a doctor come in and keep you out of pain with certain drugs, all that can be defined as healthcare. Actually killing the patient cannot be defined as healthcare. Like, that's just not healthcare.
It's not.
Ending lives is not healthcare. It's not what it is. It's something else. And you might like it, but it's still not healthcare. And they just say reproductive healthcare. They say women's rights because these are stand-ins for the terrible thing that they're arguing for.
Also, prenatal care is not something that Planned Parenthood even does.
No.
They don't even do prenatal health care. Yep.
They don't do the cancer screenings. They don't do breast cancer screenings. They can refer you to get one, which is really helpful.
But they don't do mammograms, and we hear that all the time. Well, you're cutting off people's ability to get a mammogram. They don't even do them. You can't even get one there.
No.
And it's like Planned Parenthood is the only place on earth that does healthcare, which they don't really do at all.
Yeah.
And now it's the opposite. They've put in people's minds that's the only place anybody can get it done.
Yeah. It's like, I always make this argument with people who bring up the healthcare thing. If you ever go to a KFC and Taco Bell, you know, they mm-hmm. they're combined there. There's KFC and Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I love, I'm a big Taco Bell guy. Let's say I'm against KFC and I love Taco Bell. Well, if they separated them into two restaurants, I would just go to the Taco Bell one, right? So if you're Planned Parenthood, just separate all your wonderful healthcare things from abortion and see how much people protest. I'll give you a news, not at all. They're not going to say one freaking word about the Taco Bell side of that. They're just going to protest the KFC side of it. And that is the thing. It's like if you stopped doing abortions, you get all the funding that every other women's healthcare clinic gets. It's just about that. And we all know for you, it's just about that as well.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK. Also, sounding off another one of the long list of the endless Democrat candidates for president, Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Buttigieg
mm-hmm. Was asked by MSNBC if he supports any abortion restrictions at all. You can't pin these guys down on any restrictions. Here's what Pete had to say.
And you've been saying that it should be left to women to decide where to draw the line, even in the third trimester. So I just want to pin you down on this. Are there any restrictions on abortion rights that you support?
The framework for this is established in Roe versus Wade. Early in pregnancy, very few restrictions. Late in pregnancy, very few exceptions. And that has stood as the law of the land for as long as I've been alive. What's radical is the idea of banning abortion outright, the thought that a woman who is raped and seeks abortion care could find her doctor going to prison for longer than her rapist. What is new and what is extreme is the assault on Roe versus Wade, which has established the framework for common sense protections, restrictions, and exceptions that have been the law of the land for as long as I've been alive and are now being overturned or threatened with being overturned by a radical agenda.
It's staggering that they're turning this around on pro-life people being the radicals, the extremists, when they are seeking abortion all the way up to including an after birth. But we're the radicals.
Yeah.
We're the extremists.
I will say, however, they're alerting the Democratic activists who listen to this program and do often. If you're out there, press Mayor Pete on that. He's giving you an answer you are not comfortable with. Very few exceptions in the third trimester. He said, you know, he said, and he's correctly stated what Roe versus Wade says, which is very early in the pregnancy, there's basically no restrictions. And very late in the pregnancy, there's basically no exceptions, meaning that you can't get an abortion late in the pregnancy, and it can be absolutely restricted by the states to the point of it being completely illegal in all circumstances. So that's an interesting thing, because Roe versus Wade is this thing that Republicans and conservatives and people who are pro-life look at as this really negative thing, which, of course, it was a terrible ruling, and we can go over that and have a million times. However, it's a massive move to the right from where we are now. It is a generational shift towards conservatism to go back to just looking at Roe versus Wade as the text stands, because that is not where we are now. We're talking about, you know, we're having a conversation about whether a baby that is already born should get any medical attention after it's born. We're talking about whether a baby can be aborted while the mother is in labor and about to pass the baby through the birth canal. Can you abort it? That's the conversation we're having now. Roe versus Wade, you can barely see that from where we are. If Mayor Pete thinks he can get away in a Democratic primary with 24 candidates of saying Roe versus Wade is the way to go, I hope some of the people listening to this program looking to start a new boycott will get Mayor Pete called on that one. Because that is not what the Democratic Party says they want right now. He says no restrictions. No, there's a lot of restrictions in Roe versus Wade.
And really, that's what's re-energized the pro-life movement, was the radicalism of the New York state law.
Yep, and the one Vermont just passed.
Yeah.
And Virginia, which didn't pass because of the controversy, largely because of the pushback. Because people keep saying, like, well, it was one guy said this. First of all, New York and Vermont are not one guy. Okay. Secondly, yes, Northam said this one thing where he said, well, look, if the baby's born and it's there and it was supposed to be aborted and it survives the abortion, well, then the woman and the doctor will have a conversation about what to do, you know, whether you treat it or not. And yes, that's one guy. However, the question was asked because another question in the same vein was asked to the assemblywoman who designed the bill, and she had to admit that, yeah, you could abort a baby that's in while the mother's in labor. So that was, it was the bill, the person who wrote the bill said, yes, that was allowed under the bill. It was not one person just blurting out and making a mistake about it. It was in the bill. And we forget about that. And now Vermont has passed a law that says basically all the way to birth. And I'm just glad that these candidates are getting pushed on important issues like this. You know, Mayor Pete, he got pushed on it a little bit. I think Democrats need to come back after him, get him, you know, because he's not going to be able to win a primary here unless he's saying, you know, unless he's legitimately shouting his abortion. You know, that is basically the place you need to be. I mean, I don't know. Have anyone asked Kamala Harris about this? Do we know where she stands?
No, but she was pinned down yesterday.
And she was.
Yeah. This is really good because her feet were in fact held to the fire yesterday on CNN by Allison Camerota. And this is probably because Allison Camerota she's an alumni of Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
So obviously she's gonna hold her feet to the fire.
Okay. Here's
what happened.
We have a little fun kicker that we like to do with all of the presidential candidates that come on in. It's called Candidate Mixtape. That was the musical sting for it. Okay. And we like to talk a lot about music here on this program. So, what is your favorite musical genre?
Wow.
Oh,
tough question.
I'm hip-hop and reggae and jazz. Those are some of my
favorites.
Okay,
pin her down,
do you have
Alex.
A favorite band or a favorite musician?
Mm.
I'd say one of my favorites is Bob Marley.
Oh my God,
good choice.
These are terrible
you
answers.
Can't go wrong with that. That's a crowd pleaser. On your mixtape, what would be like your favorite three songs?
Favorite three songs? Wow,
oh,
good question.
Okay, let's see. Aretha Franklin. Anything Aretha Franklin.
Oh my God, this is terrible. She's not prepared for this.
I would say
she is not prepared.
Marley, and then,
this might end her career right here. It
I
just
don't know.
Might
I love
it.
Cardi B.
Oh,
still not a single song in there.
As she says. those are great. Thank you for playing along.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wasn't that powerful? Good interview.
Because I love the idea that, like, instead of pressing around the abortion at like 1 second before birth, you're going after her favorite songs, which I love. However, I gotta say, her answers are
terrible.
So bad.
They're she terrible.
Just, well, what are the three genres I can list that have you can't criticize? Like, if you're gonna pick three, it's gotta be hip hop, reggae, and jazz. And then, well, who's your favorite? Bob Marley. All right. Like, do you have any knowledge of it? Like, that's what I would say as a big reggae fan myself visiting Jamaica once. I would say probably Bob Marley, because other than Ziggy Marley, I couldn't pick anyone else that I know.
No, I couldn't either.
Right? And then, what are your favorite three artists?
Your favorite three songs.
Or songs.
On your mixtape. And she didn't name any songs.
She said Bob Marley again. Cardi B, which again is just like, that one should be controversial. Here's a woman who has described herself how she would drug John's as a dancer and steal their money. You want to talk about a Me Too violation? I mean, that's like, that's not controversial at all. You could absolutely just blurt that out as a presidential candidate. No big deal, Cardi B. And who was the third one? Gosh.
I don't even remember.
Aretha Franklin.
Oh, Aretha.
Can you come up with a safer answer than Aretha Franklin?
No.
I mean,
no,
like, that is just, it's I'm
pathetic.
Actually more angry about her songs than the abortion issue. Like, I am now, pro-life is now secondary. I just have a constant jihad against Kamala Harris's music choices.
But boy, these reporters, these journalists really pinned down these candidates. You remember one of them from the New York Times, Jeff Zeleny, did the same thing to Obama a few years ago.
So what has surprised you the most about this office, enchanted you the most
enchanted
about
you
serving in this
the
office,
most.
Humbled you the most,
yeah,
and troubled you the most?
Let me write this down.
See, but you remember that?
Oh, gosh.
And I don't know that he ever recovered from that brutal question.
I think he was searching for his level of enchantment his entire two terms. And he never quite got there, which is sad.
It's just, it's amazing to watch these Democrats be fawned over. And then, you know, they practically bring weapons to a Donald Trump interview. It's amazing.
Yeah.
There's no objectivity anymore at all.
We spent a decent time this hour talking about abortion. And it's not only an important issue, it's also the clearest example, I think, of media bias. And people talk about media bias. Obviously, like, it sometimes the fake news thing can be overdone, and you know, the media bias thing can be an easy thing for Republicans to say all the time about every issue, right? And it's almost universally true at some level. But you look at this, when someone like Todd Akin, remember Todd Akin? He ran for Senate back in 2010, was it?
Yeah, and he said something inappropriate about rape.
Rape. I think he said
that they don't
the guy
usually
said legitimate
get
rape, or like, if it's a legitimate rape, the body will reject the pregnancy or something. It was a very strange comment. And, and look, Akin took a beating for it, probably deserved a beating for it, and lost the election, probably because of it. However, if it ended there, it would have been fine, right? Like, you could say if someone says something wrong, whether you think that comment is right or wrong or you know, whatever, the person who says it should be criticized for it, right? Like, that's how that debate should happen. But that's not how it happened with Akin. Every other Republican candidate was forced to answer for his comments. He's forced.
Right.
With Northam, it's not like that at all. Democrats don't get their feet held to the fire. They don't have to answer for what he said or what many others have said. They don't get, I mean, every Republican gets asked the question, hey, rape and incest, hey, life of the mother, health of the mother, the most difficult decisions to be made about abortion, no matter how you feel about them, right? These are the tough borderline ones that someone who's really pro-choice might have, pro-life might have an issue with. Well, you'd say the same thing basically about an abortion 5 minutes before birth. Whether a baby that survives an abortion should get medical care. You put yourself in the mind of a hardcore leftist, That's where they're making their decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So wouldn't it follow that every journalist, every single time they had one of these Democratic candidates on, would be forced to give me the day. I want the minute that you have to, you're able to have some rights as a quote unquote fetus. What is that minute? When does it start? Mm-hmm. Is there any abortion restriction? You heard Mayor Pete get asked that question, but with no follow up. I mean, the fact that he could just throw out, well, Roe versus Wade is good and we shouldn't overturn it, is not an answer to that question. And Republicans all had to answer that question. They all had to answer it over and over and over and over again, even though they weren't the ones advocating any other policy. And so you see that real media bias there, is that Republicans are pushed to the most uncomfortable places in their policy, where Democrats are given this sort of blanket, well, do you like women? Do you like rights? How do you feel about rights? Do you think, what about health care? Do you think women should be denied health care? And they get to answer these questions like that. Well, you know, of course, that's mm-hmm. the subtle media bias. It's easy to find things where they go after Donald Trump and bash him unfairly. And those things absolutely exist. They're all over the place. But it's stuff like that, that these people will never have to make the uncomfortable, unpopular statement because they're never pressed on it. And they don't go on shows like this. They don't go on shows
never.
Like, you know, Ben Shapiro or Mark Levin or Steven Crowder or any of them. They don't have to deal with it. The only time they'll ever go on Fox News is when they're going up against like Shepard Smith, and Shep Smith won't ask those questions because he's on their side on them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very subtle thing that I think if a journalist from the outside might look at it and say, well, both were asked about their abortion positions. Yeah, but how? How are they asked about it? You know, it puts Republicans in the most unpopular and, you know, unpleasant light as possible, and puts Democrats in the exact opposite. They get the nice, you know, morning sunshine. They could just answer, give you a nice flowery answer. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like Buttigieg's answer is pathetic. You know, look, Roe versus Wade is the law of the land, but we shouldn't overturn it. That's not an answer to that question
no,
at all.
It is not. 888-727-BECK. It's Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. Let's go to Tom in North Carolina. Hey, Tom, you're on the Glenn Beck Program with Pat and Stu.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Listen, this popped into my head in the car, and I haven't fleshed this idea out at all. Matter of fact, that's why I'm calling. I want you guys to help flesh out this concept that might bring the liberals around on the issue of abortion.
Okay.
So I thought if we started referring to the unborn as the undocumented, that might give them a different take on the issue.
That's true, because I mean, you don't get your birth certificate until you're born.
Right.
And we can start talking about that like they're their papers.
Uh-huh.
And they're just on the other side of the border. We just need to get them over here and get them documented.
Yes, you wouldn't kill them on the other side of the border.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, yes,
hey,
they're...
I knew you guys.
They're undocumented humans.
I'm fully on board on this with this idea.
Thanks a lot, Tom. That's a genius idea.
Because you can't build a wall, essentially, that prevents them from coming to this side, right?
That's, right.
That's
well,
the
that
issue.
Would be immoral.
A wall
is immoral.
Abortion is a wall.
Yes.
It's a wall preventing them from, to come from one side of the birth canal to the other. And that's
actually not
right.
A bad idea at all.
It isn't. And that documentation, it's real. They're just not... when right. You get born is when you get documented. Stunningly, in this country, we will just not give documentation. That's what someone should pass. Like in Alabama should just be like, we're going to give the birth certificate when you find out about the pregnancy. And then, look, you could just... you're just going to have to crumple that thing up as you walk out of Planned Parenthood if you want to. But they will be documented. And at that point, you can't do anything to someone who's documented. I mean, undocumented protects you.
That's
in
great.
This country.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
I
like it. I think it'll work. They'd just bail on that. If it actually did come true, they would just bail on that part of their policy. But they'll do anything to protect abortion. Anything.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's like the
top a religion
priority.
To them.
It is
it's,
absolutely a religion.
That and climate change are their two strongest religions. I don't know why. I don't know how it brings them money or power, but for some reason, they worship at the altar of abortion. There's no question.
Well, the climate thing can bring money and power to anything.
Yeah.
That's why they like the climate thing, because it's all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. It controls the entire economy. The abortion thing is different. I mean, it is a...
It's a weird
it's
one.
A dark church, man.
Yeah.
That's a dark church to be in.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Today with Pat Gray, in for Glenn, and you can catch my own show, Pat Gray Unleashed, which happens weekday mornings right before the Glenn Beck Radio Extravaganza with Glenn and Stu, and Stu is back today. Welcome back, Stu.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate that.
We got to get into this. There's some legislation now to try to stop tech companies from tracking us online. There's also something going on at the FCC where they might allow phone companies to not complete phone calls from scammers, which I am all about that. We'll get into that coming up in about 60 seconds. Pat and Stu for Glenn this week. Legislation is passing through Congress right now to stop tech companies from tracking our online surfing. And it's getting some momentum, I guess, as Congress is trying to crack down now on big tech's privacy practices. On Tuesday, Senator Josh Hawley unveiled a do not track bill with some tough penalties for companies who break the protections. And that revives a debate over whether users should be allowed to opt out of the tracking and data collection. I think you should be allowed to opt out. In fact, you should have to opt into it. I hate the opt out thing because a lot of times you don't know what you're opting out of. You didn't even know you needed to opt out of something.
Yeah, I had an issue with my Yahoo Mail accounts that I started for my children.
Yeah.
So I started them when they were born. I started the email addresses, and I was emailing them little pieces of advice and videos and pictures of like things that we did when they were too young to remember.
That is adorable, Stu. That is adorable.
I am adorable,
yes,
and I know this.
I like that.
However, it was less adorable when they just deleted the accounts for no reason. And I've lost all the stuff that I sent.
Oh, wow.
Now, I say all, and everyone points this out on social media, and I appreciate you coming to my rescue here. There are some that I can save because I sent them from my sent accounts. However, it wasn't just me who was doing it. It was other relatives and things. I mean, it's really annoying. And just to try to repurpose it all back together, it'll be better than nothing.
Did you ever find out why that happened?
Yes,
why
I did.
That?
Yes, I did. It's just there in black and white.
Uh-huh.
It was there in black and white. That's what the customer service representative told me. It's there in black and white.
Okay.
In the very lengthy agreement that I signed on to when I opened the account.
Accept.
When I pressed accept and did not, of course, read it because no human being on earth has ever read one of these documents. The terms and conditions did apply to me, and because I didn't log in frequently enough.
Oh,
now, of course,
gosh.
It's an account for my kids, not for me.
Right.
And I signed up with. They had to give you a say, hey, if we need to contact you, what are your other email addresses? What's your phone number? I put all that information in thinking that if there was an issue, I would get an alert, came to the other account and said, hey, you haven't logged in too long of a period of time or whatever is in this agreement you signed.
You got no such
warning. Nothing. So
obviously.
they just deleted them all. And this is the thing, like you probably can opt out of it. And the way you opt out is not using them. Right, like that is the current thing. If you don't have to, as you would know, Pat, you don't have to use Facebook. This is something that Americans now believe that is a requirement of their life.
Uh-huh.
You can get through it without Facebook, without Twitter, without Instagram. It's possible to live.
It is possible,
and I do think that makes me a little nervous when we talk about new legislation and controls on these companies. In that, you know, there's a difference between what is a right and what is just awesome. And the internet is like one of those things that's just awesome. It's not your right to be on the internet. It's not. You want to pass a constitutional amendment that says it is? Go ahead. Try it. You might even get it through. I mean, I think probably
maybe.
Republicans and Democrats would probably agree that access to the internet
should
in
be
some
right.
way should be a right. Maybe they would be able to get that through. But for right now, a company can essentially say, if you want to do business with us, you live by our rules.
And we're going to track you.
And that's the reason why this service is free. Like, it's almost like they should say, if you want to pay $9.95 a month for Facebook, then we won't track you at all. And that actually might be a place that makes sense in the middle. Because, you know, I wouldn't pay $9.95 for Facebook because I don't care about
either.
It. However, if I did care about it, I might do that to avoid the tracking. I might say, you know what? Fine. I'll pay $9.95 a month and don't track me. Problem is, so many other things are tracking you anyway, you know. And I understand. So I understand this approach.
I mean, Google, right? Doesn't Google keep track of virtually everything we do online?
Yeah. I mean,
if you use their browser.
I know. I love that because people are like, well, I'm able to block this because I'm using Google's. I don't use any Google. Glenn used to say this. I don't use any Google products. I don't use any Gmail or any of that. I don't use Google Maps. None of it because I know I don't want Google tracking me. What browser
Google
do you
search?
Use? Chrome.
Yeah.
How do you search? Google.
Google.
But in fact, I don't even call it search. I call it Googling.
And really, what are you going to search with? Lycos? Ask Jeeves.
It's always Ask Jeeves, man. I mean, here's a nice guy who promises never to track you. He's a butler. Jeeves doesn't care about where you're going online. He's just a nice guy.
He's not trying to sell you a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. And I will say, before you do it, DuckDuckGo is another thing that will search for you and apparently not track you. However, if you're using it on Chrome, you may have an issue, right?
Yes.
But yes, DuckDuckGo is the big one, the privacy-based search engine that a lot of people will point to. And it does seem to work actually pretty well. It's not like Ask Jeeves, which but I'm sure is great.
There's still no search engine, really, that can compete with Google, right? Even Bing or whatever that is. Yeah. I mean, Bing, I've tried it a few times, and it's just not Google.
And are you really that excited about being tracked by Microsoft instead of Google? Like, does that
I'm
really
not.
Get you... That does get me hot. I'll say that. It's, you know, it's like you want someone, you have to almost go with a privacy based one that's doing it just for that. And even then, you're still getting tracked at some level by somebody else, your IP company. You know, it's funny because they've been talking about the way these things develop. And so many of them are able to skate through all of these rules.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as the technology develops, it's developed so quickly. They can't keep up with all of the rules. Now, that's a good reason why it's been so great. That's why the internet has been so great. They haven't been victimized by the business regulation that every other business...
It's been largely left alone.
Yeah.
It's kind of the wild, wild west still.
And the negatives do exist. The tracking's there are some negatives to that. But overall, I don't think
it's a pretty good experience.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, because these are private companies, maybe I shouldn't want the government to get involved in cracking down on their tracking. But I do want them to.
It's just one of those things that's annoying enough.
It is.
To just want anyway.
And the other thing I want is for them to stop the robocalls on my cell phone. It used to be that your cell phone, I thought, was like sacrosanct in that regard, that they couldn't call your cell phone. And I think that's when it cost you money when people call you, when they called. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. So... that opened up the floodgates of robocalls and spammers and scammers. And they're trying to... The FCC is about to allow the phone companies to not complete those calls, which would be fantastic. Now, will some dolphins get caught up in that tuna net where some people that want to complete a call to you are not able to? I'm sure that'll happen. Yeah, there's... Like debt collectors, they're all upset about this.
Well, we got to... Got to get a hold of our debtors and bother them.
Well, okay, but maybe you shouldn't be placing that many calls at a time that the software thinks you're a spammer. I don't know. Maybe leave people alone a little bit.
Well, how am I going to collect my debt?
I don't know, but I want the spam to stop. I don't know how to fix it for the debt collectors. But I want the...
Well,
in fact, I got a couple examples. That I've had just recently on my cell phone, and they do leave messages. If you don't answer, they'll leave you messages. And sometimes it's in Chinese. Have you ever gotten the calls, the spammers in Chinese?
I have not had that, no. Wow. I get these all the time, though.
Oh, and my gosh.
I get them something about a warranty they want to give me for my car. You get
the
that one all the time?
Warranty people drive me out of my mind.
I'm not going to fall for this. But
I know.
But, of course, this is the type of thing that they don't need a person who's listening to talk radio to fall for it. They need the person who barely knows how to press buttons on their phone to fall for it.
The person who's 75 or 80 and doesn't really understand how it works with spam and scam calls.
Yeah.
And when you get this kind of call, sometimes it can be scary to people.
And once it gets expired after that, you will be taken under custody by the local police.
Can you believe that? They were going to take me under custody.
Oh my gosh.
By the local police. In my area,
in
my local area, they were those police.
Now, they didn't bother to tell you what area that was.
They didn't tell me what.
Because you know it. You're local. Right. So you know the local area.
I know which police office which department is going to come after me.
Right.
I know.
As there are four serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment.
Oh, my gosh.
Four serious allegations pressed on my name. How many allegations do you have pressed on your name?
I would assume it's not four.
It's not four.
It's got to be one or two.
Guarantee.
Maybe pressed against my name?
I've conducted so much illegal activity that there's four allegations pressed on my name.
Gosh.
So
we would request you to get back to us.
Well, yeah.
So that we can discuss about this case.
We're going to
discuss
before
taking
about.
Any legal action against you.
Oh, that's scary.
The number to reach us is 518-615-7980.
I only encourage everyone to call that number. only everyone. They're going to repeat it, so if you missed it the first time.
Okay, good.
515-615-7980.
7980.
Thank
so they
you.
They want you to call, so I would. Mm-hmm. And then there was this particular call just this week.
Very time sensitive and urgent that I do hear back from you before we proceed further with suspension of your social and assets.
Can you believe they're going to suspend my social?
Your social is going to be completely suspended.
Oh
my gosh.
And my assets. Now I don't know what social of mine, my Twitter account, my Facebook, what social. My social security number? You suspend a social security number? Just my social. So
my direct call back number is 386-243-7865 again.
7865. She's going to say
number
it again.
Number is 386-243-7865.
I would say here, because look, they are soliciting calls to this number. But there's a reason they're soliciting calls.
Oh, that's right.
So you may not want to not.
Yeah, you may not. You may not want to call
because it's not going to annoy them. It's going to wind up putting you on a list, and then you're going to get these calls. So,
you
may want to hesitate before you actually call.
There must be some way that they scam money out of you when you do call.
Yeah, I can't remember what podcast it was. One of these podcasts that looks into strange things in technology. I want to say it was Reply All, but I don't remember which one it was. Anyway, they looked into these robocalls and tried to track the source of them. Which was pretty interesting because there was one guy who was working at a company and I want to say it was TripAdvisor or Yelp. Okay. It was one of those like review companies and they were having issues because legitimate resorts were like getting terrible reviews on, I think it was TripAdvisor, and they were getting these reviews because spam people like this were calling with robocalls and saying, you should call us back and book your free vacation to blank resort. And so people would hear that, would call, and of course it was a scam. They just redirected them to try to buy some expensive vacation to another crappy resort completely unrelated. They were using a big name resort to cover the fraud. And then the real company was getting the bad reviews. Because people were thinking they're just screwing me.
Wow!
So they went to try to find this, and they tracked it down, you know, to these companies in Mexico and in Central America that were using like one guy in like his living room in the United States to make like hundreds of millions of robocalls.
Wow!
And you know, the guy wound up getting in a lot of trouble because he did violate all sorts of laws and. Seemingly just acted. His excuse was essentially, I didn't really know. You know?
Sorry, no,
I didn't know.
Work with me.
No.
Is he on death row?
I don't think he is.
He didn't get the death penalty?
He did. I don't think he got the death penalty.
That's wrong.
Almost.
That's wrong.
It was close.
It's just wrong.
People hate those things, man.
Oh. More in 60 seconds. Pat and Stu for Glenn. 888-727-BECK. So the guy who was responsible for all those hundreds of millions of robocalls, you found out what they... He did not get the death penalty.
No.
Right? He's not on death row.
I believe he was fined $120 million, though.
Oh, that's a good start.
Which is a significant amount.
That's a significant amount of money.
A notable amount of money.
Yes.
It was actually, now that I'm remembering it, it was a story from Wired.com. Perhaps the best part of the story is the guy who uncovered the giant robocall scam. Mm-hmm. His name was Fred Garvin. If you know Fred Garvin, male prostitute from the Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Fred Garvin, male prostitute. That was Dan Aykroyd's bit in like the 70s.
Funny. Yeah.
Maybe 80s.
Was it his real name?
I guess his I think it was Fred Garvin. No, maybe it wasn't his real name. I can't remember. This guy's become like the robocall hunter. Because he found this one particular guy, but he had made over 100 million phone calls, robocalls, and was fined $120 million. Was dragged in front of Congress. I'll tweet the article out while you're being tracked by your all of your technology.
Yes,
you can now be tracked to look at an article with a guy whose name is the same as a male prostitute. So I don't know what that's going to do to your future employment prospects, but read it anyway. It's really fascinating because, I mean, you realize that like. It's almost impossible for them to stop it because they can create fake numbers. They can,
Yeah, they roll over. I mean, as soon as you, block one call, it just rolls over to the next number.
Yeah, and the way they had to do it was the guy signed up for like as many shady lists as he could with his cell phone, and then hoped he would get robocalls and started recording the robocalls so that he could try to track them, because they could give you legitimate numbers you can call, which then forwards you to some offshore, you know, phone bank where they don't even know necessarily where the call came from. They don't know that you were told that you're going to get some Marriott resort. They just know sell them this timeshare, right? Like they mm-hmm. it's like there's all these disconnected pieces. Not everyone knows which part is which. The guy at the end of the road might not even know if what he's selling is real or not, and they might not even be in the country. So how do you even track it down? It's just it's one of these things that I think, like, it feels good for legislators to try to come up with a rule to stop it because it's so freaking annoying.
Yes, it is.
In the end of the day, though, are they going to be able to stop someone in, you know, Bangladesh from making phone calls?
So many of them are overseas. Yeah. So many of them are out of the country. And you can tell when they say things like,
and once it get expired after that, you will be taken under custody by the...
You'll be taken under custody.
local police.
By local police.
There are four serious allegations pressed on your name.
When they say things like, there are going to be four serious allegations pressed on your name, you know they're probably not English speakers. So it's coming from somewhere else.
It's funny, though.
And you can disregard it.
They say that, you know, the whole scam when it comes to the Nigerian prince situation. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're in the middle of a negotiation with a Nigerian prince, maybe yours is real. I don't know. Like, usually, though, the Nigerian prince did not just fall out of power and have $100 billion he wants to split with you.
Really?
Yeah, it's usually not the way it works. Huh. And a lot of times you get those emails, and you read them, and you're like, how could anyone fall for this? Like, they're not even mm-hmm. spelling the words right. They're not in the right order. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I get the idea that, like, he's supposed to be a Nigerian prince, so maybe he wouldn't have perfect English. But you get the thing mm-hmm. of, like, if you're going to make a multi-million dollar transaction with someone you've never met, perhaps they should know the language a little bit.
Perhaps. Yeah.
And so you think, why can't they even take the time to spell the words right? Why can't they even take the time to understand the language well enough? And there's a very specific reason why they do that, is because anyone with any sense is not going to fall for this. So the calculation by the people in doing the Nigerian scam,
they don't need to speak perfect English.
Right. Well, and more than that, they actually intentionally will not speak perfect English. They intentionally will spell words wrong, because only a person who would think a multi-million dollar transaction is about to happen with a guy who can't spell half the email correctly, only that person who's gullible enough to think that is going to actually go through with the whole scam. The person who is smart enough to say, I'm not going to answer this because they can't even spell the words right, that person isn't going to fall for the scam. So they wind up wasting their time sorting out people who are interested or are trolling them or are just, you know, interested enough to make that first outreach, but not interested enough to go to their bank account and give bank account numbers out. They need the person who's gullible enough to think, well, this Nigerian prince out of nowhere emailed me unsolicited, can't speak the language, can't spell the words. However, let me give them my bank account number. That's the person they need, because that person is the person who's going through with the whole thing. And it's fascinating, because I think a lot of that happens with these robocalls, too. They're so bad. But if you hear someone saying you're about to get arrested by local police, or excuse me,
And
once it gets expired after that, you will be taken under custody.
Under custody. If you take it under custody, maybe those are the people that actually fall for it.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program, 888-727-BECK. Let's go to Gene in Pennsylvania. Hey, Gene, you're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about the robocalls.
Mm-hmm.
I've been getting them about a year ago. I started getting calls for that same creepy voice telling me that the licensing key on my computer was going to expire. And, of course, I blew it off.
Uh-huh.
And they kept calling. Well, one day, I can't get on my laptop. So I called the number. And they said, your key has expired, and going to cost $200 to renew it. And I said, I'm not paying $200. What are you talking about? And he said, pay the $200 or lose your computer. And he hung up on me. So I got on my iPad on Facebook, and I said, hey, has anybody heard of this? And somebody said, well, you've been hacked. Just take the battery out. And I did, and my computer works fine. Now I'm getting the calls again. I have a landline because I don't have a cell phone signal at home.
Uh-huh.
So I'm using, I'm on my landline. I get a call three times within about 20 minutes. Caller ID was my landline number telling me that my computer key is going to expire again. So these guys are pretty crafty, but that would have cost me $200.
Jeez. So and, you just removed the battery, though, and that reset everything, and then your computer worked.
Yes, it did.
Wow.
And he, my friend actually told me to press a couple of keys, but I didn't need to. He said, when you, you put the battery back in, just press these keys. I didn't need to. It came right back up.
Yeah. And
nice. But if I hadn't done that, I would have, what I had done? On a new computer.
Yeah, right, probably. And Gene, it's interesting because you're the exact person these things don't work on. The person who's mm-hmm. willing to actually go onto Facebook, post about it, like actually learn about it before just paying the money. That's right. Why they hang up on you, because they probably detected you were too smart for their little scam, and it's not going to work. And you know, and anyone could be a victim of these things. I don't want to say it's not intelligence per se, but it's not it's a lack of awareness about these types of things.
Right.
And anyone could be a victim, but it's, the second you show any pushback, there's no point. It no longer works for them anymore.
Yeah. Some of them are pretty bold. My daughter was having a really bad day once, and she was over at her house, and she got one of these calls, and I heard her crying in the other room. So I went to see what the deal was, and it was somebody claiming to be from the IRS, and they were threatening her with all manner of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were gonna take her home from her. And I got on and argued with the person, and she acted as though she was legitimately from the IRS and swore up and down that this was an actual official phone call. I mean, sometimes they'll really fight for their scam. They're pretty bold. Mm-hmm. And it can scare the crap out of you. If you're not really, you know, thinking about it, you're not really paying attention, you're not really sure what they're saying to you, and you don't really understand the circumstance. Like if somebody else does the bills and they're telling you that you didn't pay your taxes, you know, sometimes they can fool you. Dave in Florida. Hi, you're on the Glenn Beck program.
On all these robocalls, I just call them on hold for you. Okay, I'm 65, and I told the guy that she called on that car thing, starter motor. Well, I was a diesel mechanic all my life. And I went off on her about the car being underwater, and I'm suing you. I'm a Pennsylvania State Inspection Mechanic, and I'm a federal inspector, and I can testify in perfect or witness program for vehicle crashes. And they were almost crying.
Oh, really?
I was trying to get a new Cadillac. Nice. I don't got a Cadillac. But the one with a cop, if you tell her, oh, I am so glad you called. I have been going cross country now for 15, 16 years, and I've killed 27 people. And I wish I had somebody to talk to. Oh, my God, that poor woman, she says, well, where are you? I says, well, I was going to come to your house. I think I have your address and phone number. And I never get called back. They never called back. I got nothing else to do, man. I'm bored. I don't have a computer. It's a little track phone, and I got nothing to screw around with. And I got nothing to cut the grass, and that's it. That's all I got to do.
All right, thanks, Dave.
You gotta have fun with him.
Yeah,
there's some people who've written books about it where they've gone back and forth with scammers, and like you can navigate their entire journey about they keep holding that little bit of a carrot out there and hoping that they'll come and you figure that if you're wasting the time of a scammer, at least other people aren't getting scammed while you're wasting their time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of time though. Mm-hmm. It's a big
yeah. It is.
Yeah, I'm not that dedicated to.
No, I'm
other
usually
people.
Not either. No.
I don't really care about humanity that much, right? if you're gonna get fooled by these things, I'm not gonna be able to stop it. Sorry,
Mike in North Carolina. Hi, you're on the Glenn Beck program.
Good afternoon, good morning, I should say. Yeah, I've been scammed about three times. Once they keep on calling me about my extended warranty is going over and stuff like that, and it's been from cars that I have let go 10 years earlier. I says, I hope it's almost gone because I hope I don't pay for it anymore.
Yeah,
and then. I get another one that says, your credit card has been compromised. Mm-hmm. And we need this information and data so that we can restore your credit up to where it should be. And I said, so I, you know, I says, well, I says, I'll tell you what, I says, I'll call my bank. And I says, and when I get the information, I says, I'll, oh, well, your bank won't know this stuff yet because we're, you know, we're, I says, well, I says, it's not legitimate then. I says, can I get my callback number so that I can call the FCC and have you arrested? Well, immediately hang up.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And then I get the IRS scam.
Yeah.
They call. They says, "Oh, yeah, your $10,000 back taxes and stuff like that." I says, "Okay, well, I was a tax preparer for a while." I says, "What year exactly was my tax?" Well, I don't have that information right here. It just says that your $10,000. I says, "Well, you have to know that if you're from the IRS."
And they should at least the IRS, fake the year.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and tell me which year so that I can, you know, I can give you what I made that year and stuff because I know all this stuff. I've got it all recorded. Well, it just says here, and you know, we need your information so that we can start collecting on this debt.
Yeah.
I says, no, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
It's interesting. I think one of the things, because some of these are awful, like he's talking about, where they don't even know, have any information. But if they can get a customer list of, let's say, you know, your Visa card, and they can describe what type of card you have, you get that call and you're like, okay, well, they're saying I have a Citibank Visa card, and I do have a Citibank Visa card, so let me call them back and see what's up. Biggest thing you could do to, whenever you get a call like that, and I do this every time, is I always make the call to the number that I know is right. So, like, if Citibank calls me up and says, "Hey, you've got an issue here, and you need to call us back," I always go to my credit card, and then I dial that number, not the one they left on the freaking voicemail.
Yeah,
I call, or I'll go on the Citibank website or whatever and get that number, and then you call them back and say, "Hey, I got this call. Was this you guys?" Half the time they say no. No, you don't have any problem. Like, there's no fraud alert. Like, that's another one they do is fraud alerts.
Yeah,
which is like, hey, you've got a fraud alert on your card. Call us back. It's like, well, you're a fraud. You know, you're the one that does this.
I got one of those from somebody claiming to be from Citibank once, and it almost tricked me. And then I thought, wait, I don't even have an account at Citibank. Hold it. That's not even my bank.
A minor issue.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
What could they do to me?
Yeah.
I don't bank there.
I recently had an issue where I was drunkenly, apparently, parking in Miami.
Oh, wow.
Did you ever do this? You ever go to like a Hard Rock Stadium in Miami and park your car unknowingly? This happens to me all the time. Yeah.
No.
I spent $40 on the parking, which, first of all, not a good value for parking.
No, it's not.
Okay. Number one, then
you should drive just a block further, and you would have gotten a better deal.
I think I could have had a better deal. Number two, I'm a little disappointed in myself because I am not a smoker.
Uh-huh.
However, I spent $448 at a smoker's lounge.
Wow.
At like 4 a.m, which I thought was a terrible decision by me in Miami, especially. And I, you know, hopefully my wife's not listening to this because she would know that I apparently took a midnight trip to Miami somehow,
right?
On a night that I was with her for most of the night. But you know, after she went to bed, I must have just got up and flew to Miami. Which I have no record of the plane ticket, which was weird. But then the big mistake I made was the $7,282 I spent on tickets to a rap festival. Now that's not a typical way I would spend my money.
That was an actual thing.
Yeah, and that really happened to me just a few weeks ago. There was a concert in Miami, I think at one of the stadiums. I think it was Hard Rock Stadium, and they it was a Rolling Stones concert, but it was actually something else. It seemingly was a festival of rappers and R&B and such. Not necessarily my genre. I'm not Kamala Harris. My three favorite genres are not hip hop, reggae, and jazz. So I did not want to go. But I was thinking $7,000 for tickets.
That seems like a lot.
Pretty extensive. But you know what they've done now? Now, I obviously did not buy any of these things. I was not in Miami in the night in question. Mm-hmm. However, now my credit card is holding this, you know, close to $10,000 of my credit line hostage until they finish their fraud investigation. Which, of course, I assume I'm going to win. You know, I mean, I really was not there. It was pretty easy to tell. I was buying things in another state at the same time. But Like, that's a, you know, if that was a my only credit card and I didn't, I would get shut off.
So somebody did actually.
Yeah, someone just did actually, like, use the number.
Just used your credit card.
I don't even understand. Wow. Like, how do you go and buy, like, if you have a credit card, like, steal my card off the table mm-hmm. of a restaurant and go somewhere. I can see people not checking the signature or not, you know, whatever. Like, that stuff happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you buy tickets? How do you buy parking with just having the number memorized? Right, like if you stole the number, how do you buy parking with that? How do you buy tickets with that? How do you go and pay at a restaurant, a $448 yeah. smoker's lounge,
wow.
with just the credit card number? Buying something online, I could see, but going in person,
has that been resolved yet?
I mean, it's still quote unquote in the middle of their fraud investigation, which wow. luckily will only take 30 to 90 days. So I only have this giant $7,000. Yeah. Amazing.
That's crazy.
I mean, it really wow. is. Because we used to talk about this, and we've talked about this with a sponsor that we have called Home Title Lock, and it's like a new, home title fraud is this new sort of crime where they go after your equity, and it's a big deal. And it's been really over the past 10 years where it's even been a thing. And Home Title Lock does protections for this. I remember reacting the same way back in the day when, like, LifeLock came out, and they were like, oh, you got to protect yourself from identity fraud. And I remember thinking to myself, identity fraud? Like, that's not going to happen to me. Like, that is the most ridiculous thing. I'm not going to bother mm-hmm. with that. And this is none mm-hmm. of, this is not a paid commercial. It's just one of those things where you just thought it wasn't going to be a big deal until now. Where, like, if you don't have one of those things now,
yeah,
this stuff can happen to you constantly. Even, yeah. you know, like, you can get hit with this stuff from your credit card side. Luckily, you're protected from that usually. But some of the stuff, they can go after you and really damage your life. They can really go after you and, yeah. and destroy it. Because if this stuff happens to you, even if you get your money back, you're talking about, a lot of times, years.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about massive legal fees.
Sometimes it takes hundreds or thousands of dollars to wrap it up.
Yeah. And yeah. you're talking about having to deal with, like, local governments, which mm-hmm. are not always the... I mean, if you've ever gone to the post office, that's a nice example of how local governments look as well. You know, it's not easy to navigate that stuff. It really is.
Wow.
It's one of those things where...
You were lucky you weren't taken under custody.
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been... with all those charges pressed on your name, I mean, you are really fortunate. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. I've been talking about these scams, and the government may be cracking down, first of all, on online tracking that companies do to us. And then, secondly, the FCC may allow phone companies to put a stop to these robocalls. Let's go to Tom in Pennsylvania. Hey, Tom, you're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Pat. Mm-hmm. I wanted to let you know that my dad was a prominent businessman his whole life. He was a well-respected community leader, board of directors on a credit union, board of directors in a hospital, and his health was failing. And at age 75, he gets caught in one of these things.
Mm.
And we, the three kids just stood in horror and told him over and over, I said, you're getting scammed. And before it was all over, and the only reason it was all over is because he died in the middle of it.
Oh, wow.
And he'd sent them $12,000. And it was that he'd won $1 million in Jamaica at some lottery. And That he hadn't entered.
Yeah.
But what they did, they groomed him. And the people, there was one single woman that would call him as his friend. And I think he was so lonely that she would call up and ask about the kids, and call them by name, knew the church he went to, knew the singing group he was in, and would ask, how's the singing group doing, and things like that.
Really sad.
Just, you know what I'm saying?
And they scammed him for $12,000?
Over a period of about 4 months, but I thought I had it cut off at the beginning. I had no idea that he kept going. And then 3 days before he died, a woman called me that knew me from Walmart and said, I just want to let you know that your dad was down here trying to wire Jamaica $1,200, and I wouldn't let him. And I said, I can't tell you. I would get in trouble. Don't tell anybody I called you.
These Walmart employees, appreciate that, Tom, are getting really good at helping people on that.
Yeah.
I've heard that multiple times.
Really? Yeah. That's great to hear.
Because they try to get you to do the prepaid card and send it to them. And I think the Walmart employees are kind of watching out for the elderly and trying to help them out and say, yeah, it's probably a scam. Might not want to do that.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. We have more promises from more Democrat candidates. There's, what, 76 now? I think 76 candidates for president.
100, yeah, 7,600.
7,600
mm-hmm. candidates. So,
yeah, and they're all good.
There are actually 9 Democrats now that are not running for president.
Are there really that many?
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
this should be down to 4 by the end of the week, though. So,
all right, we'll get into that and much more coming up in about 1 minute. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program, 888-727-BECK, and Stu back from vacation. So you're pretty excited about some of Elizabeth Warren's new plans.
Yeah, I mean, here she is. She's actually doing fairly well in the poll. She's doing better than I would have expected her to do.
Yeah,
she's
getting it seems like that. She went away, and now she's kind of had a rebirth a little bit.
Yeah, and she's kind of positioning herself as like the policy wonk. Mm-hmm. Of the candidates, the person who's actually
she's got a plan for everything.
Yeah, yep, and that is legitimately what she's trying to do, which is not a terrible idea. I mean, she's not a good politician. She's not relatable. She's not likable. So why not write a lot of long white papers for people to read and hope that works? And it may. I don't know. Might.
I mean, she's reprehensible, but she's got a plan.
Yes,
and maybe that'll work.
Yes.
I don't know.
She just basically her plan is. Here's a new policy proposal in a 40-page, you know, sort of white paper that discusses why this group is evil. Mm-hmm. You know, rich people, white people, men, whatever it is, that she's just basically saying every group that is not, you know, a wonderful Native American woman like herself is the cause for all of the problems in the world, and here's how we're going to take their money and pay for other things. So she's got it. There's a detailed explanation of what they're saying this stuff cost in the Washington Post today, and it's pretty interesting, and I would say... aggressively conservative on cost. She's saying that the universal child care and pre-K is going to cost $707 billion. Now, it's going to cost a lot more than that, but she's saying it's $707 billion. This one is completely ridiculous. Universal college only costing $650 billion. There's no way that's true.
Yeah.
Eliminating college debt, $640 billion. Affordable housing for all, $500 billion. Affordable housing for all is going to cost a hell of a lot more than $500 billion. Opioids, another $100 billion. Some public land stuff, $32 billion. Debt relief for Puerto Rico is at $15 billion. How are you going to pay for all this, though? That's where it gets interesting, because you know she's going to spend a lot of your money.
You just tax the rich. That's all you do.
Yeah.
You just tax the rich.
I kind of thought we were past the point in which people would even try to claim that. Like, you know, if you get a legitimate socialist and you get him in the truth hat, you put a hat on him that makes him tell the truth. Mm-hmm. They will tell you, look, of course we're going to have to raise taxes on everybody. Of course. I mean, we're basically taking the entire
economy. Yeah, the middle
economy.
Class will pay.
Yes, of course you're going to pay
of
more.
Burden, yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren's sticking with it. And one of the reasons she's sticking with it, she said she's going to raise $2.75 trillion in a wealth tax. Now, a wealth tax is 2% on all your assets above $50 million. And 1% on assets above $1 billion. So she's really going after the super duper high end here, which is why you can get some decent polling on an issue.
Because you can get most people in America to say, that's somebody else. I'm not going to worry about
that. I'm never going to be a billionaire.
I'm never going to have $50 million. That's fine. Go ahead and hit them.
It's a terrible way to react
to
something. It's
terrible.
I mean, it's the same thing of, I mean, there's been poems written about this in European nations
first
in the past.
First they came for the ultra wealthy. Right.
But I mean, it also is just like, well, you could make this argument with everything. Well, I'm not black. I don't care what they do to blacks. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you make it fair for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to make policy decisions based on, well, I am not that person. I'm going to be affected by it, so I don't care.
And beyond not supposed to, I think it's unconstitutional.
Yes. And that's an interesting thing is that most likely, unless the Supreme Court grants new rights that it's never, the Constitution has never held before, it is an unconstitutional tax. And this goes back to the
16th
Amendment.
To put the burden on one certain group of people is unconstitutional.
Yeah, and the Constitution was very careful to not allow taxation by the federal government. And you know that they, of course, had to pass the 16th Amendment to get the income tax to be a thing. Mm-hmm. Because our founders did not want the income tax. They would have put it in there, but they fought about it. Mm-hmm. There were a couple who were like interested in certain aspects, but they did not want an income tax. So the this country who actually was able to get through a nice chunk of its history without an actual income tax, then put through a constitutional amendment allowing it. However, when they debated that, they very specifically said you cannot have this type of tax, a wealth tax, where you can go in and just rip money out of... I mean, because if you think about functionally how this happens, let's just say you own a bunch of real estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's valued at, $100 million. And you might think, well, I don't care what happens to that person because they have $100 million. But if stop and think about this for a moment, that doesn't mean that you have the $100 million, right? It's invested in properties. So then you're at the point where you're now selling off the properties to pay the taxes, which is like you're forcing a person's hand. You're basically controlling their financial lives. In addition to that, it's not constitutional. The government does not have the power to go tax your wealth. That is not something, it's a very specific type of tax that is not allowed. And, going through history, people to the point of like James Madison were like, no, you can't do that. That's not something you're allowed to do. Now, they could pass a constitutional amendment to allow it. There's also some, and I don't know where they get this idea, Pat, there's some belief that the new Supreme Court might just interpret it another way and decide that does exist in the Constitution. Which, they seem to be doing a decent
Wouldn't
amount of lately.
Me.
Right. I mean, you're going to be surprised if John Roberts comes out and says, yeah, you can tax wealth. I mean, no one's going to be surprised by that. And right. Obviously, people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg are going to be on whatever side is most close to socialism. So the idea that she's going to be able to do this is highly questionable, shouldn't be allowed in the Constitution. Even a lot of left-wing sources are saying, yeah, probably not constitutional. However, there's a strain of thought that maybe you can kind of make it constitutional in a way. And you say, well, maybe what they meant, because the language is like around direct taxes and all sorts of like terms that aren't specifically defined, but have been talked about and ruled upon many, many times to make it so you could not have a wealth tax. So I don't know if she's going to be able to pay for this. She also wants to raise taxes on 7% tax on every dollar in company profit above $100 million. So a giant new tax there, and an estate tax. She's going to raise $500 billion taxing the dead, which is always nice.
That is just immoral.
I know. It really is.
It's just immoral. Why would you assess a tax on people's wealth once they die? That doesn't make any sense. They've already paid all their taxes.
Yeah.
And so now you're going to double and triple tax what they've made and take it from them when the government has no right to their property or their money.
Absolutely not.
No right.
And that's the thing. It's like, unless you're in Chicago, dead people don't vote. So it's easy to tax dead people because mm-hmm. they just don't have a lot of pushback. They've lost the ability to move. They've lost the ability to get to the polls.
Right.
In places other than Chicago where they make it all the time.
They've lost the ability to protest.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see them on a street corner.
Right. And of course, even if you do protest, the family protests or whatever, you're just some evil rich person who wants to take money away from poor people, and you look horrible, so people mm-hmm. don't generally do it. It's tough. It's a tough stance, and that's why you have to have people who are acting on principle and not acting on just what feels good at the moment. I want to focus, though, for a second on the college program from Elizabeth Warren. This is fascinating. She says her plan will cost $1.25 trillion over 10 years. Think about where we are. I mean, there used to be a time where if you had a new spending proposal and a new tax increase, you would hide it. Now, I mean, Elizabeth Warren is basically advertising it, which I think is good. At least she's saying it,
mm-hmm.
though she's advertising these costs at much lower than they will be. The Urban Institute, which is not some right-wing organization, said costs for free 2 and 4 year colleges would quickly spiral beyond estimates. Because, of course, if you're thinking about going to college, and you're like, maybe it costs too much. Maybe I won't be able to afford it. Maybe I'll go to a cheaper college. Well, if everything's free, then you start going for the best colleges only, right?
Yeah.
You go to the place that is most expensive. And you know who else realizes this? Colleges. Because they're going to say, well, we're charging $30,000 per student a year now, but we're keeping those costs relatively low because we want to. I mean, that's not low, but they're saying we're keeping them as low as we can because students have to be able to afford it. Well, what happens when they don't have to afford it anymore? When mm-hmm. if they charge $50,000, it's going to get paid. And if they charge $30,000, it's going to get paid by the government. So why would I charge 30? This is what happens with tuition and loan guarantees. This is why the tuition gets so high anyway. So when the government steps in and says, yeah, we're paying everything off, I mean, that is just, it's going to be nonstop cash flowing to these universities. The Warren campaign did not provide an analysis of how it estimated the cost of its free college program, which includes increasing Pell Grants and creating a $50 billion fund for historically black colleges and universities and minority serving institutions. If it's, I like this breakdown. It's a lot of money, but if it accomplishes the goal of getting more people to go to college and stay there for a longer time, it'll be more expensive. You're waiting for them to say, well, it'll be worth it. No, it'll be even more expensive than $1.25 trillion. I love how the college debt thing is like this big, is a big issue now. And one of the reasons why is a story that happened over the weekend where a billionaire was making Robert Smith. He is a big tech investor. And he said he would pay off all the student debt for 396 graduates at Morehouse College.
Almost $40 million.
Yeah, really cool thing, first of all, that a person would want to do that. And it is giving him all the annoyances you would expect it to give him. Because we live in America, and the fact that you come up with a great thing where you're going to pay off a bunch of kids' college is just something you get punished for. And now this billionaire, who is the wealthiest black man in America, is getting all sorts of uncomfortable questions, and so are other billionaires. First, you're getting the idea of like, well, I mean, this billionaire did this. Why aren't other billionaires doing this?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get this. This is a guy who, his name is Shaquille Lampley. He is going to this college. And so he's, I mean, think about this. This is an awesome moment. You're at your graduation. This guy's coming up. He's giving you some speech. You've heard these things a million times. You're probably half falling asleep. And then he says, oh, by the way, I'm paying off all your college debt. Incredible. So he says his debt is about $200,000 in loan. In loans taken out by his mother, covering 6 years in school. He says, I am so grateful and still in shock about this gift, and now I have so many questions about how this will be processed. For example, are all student loans included? You'd think, man, probably, yeah. Does the pledge include loans taken out by the graduate's parents? So is it just the loans that the kids take out, or if the parents do it, is that covered? What about gifts from home equity loans? If you borrow against a home equity loan, then you're just paying off someone's home equity loan.
Wow.
Does that count? Will it benefit kids who never made it to graduation because their debt forced them to withdraw before they earned a degree?
What about last year's students?
What about last year's students? What about next year's students?
Yes.
What about the kid that took a job, worked through college, paid off half their debt, right?
Uh-huh.
And now, because they did the right thing for 4 years, the person next to them that did nothing gets more money from this billionaire than they do. That's not fair. People are now, they're saying, feeling a level of survivor's guilt because they're the ones being targeted here and surviving.
It's insane.
I mean, come on.
It's like the Oprah Winfrey thing. She gives everybody in the studio a new car.
Right.
And it's like, well, what about the taxes? Why haven't you paid their taxes? What's that all about? Rat-infested piles of rotting garbage have been left uncollected by the city of Los Angeles, sometimes for months. There is no explanation really as to why there are rotting piles of garbage in Los Angeles. I guess they just can't keep up with the garbage fast enough. There's no, as far as I know, there's no garbage strike. But it's leading to concerns about new epidemics in Los Angeles, including flea-borne typhus cases and bubonic plague, the Black Death that swept Europe and Asia in the 1300s and killed 50 to 75 million people.
Just the 50 to 75
million.
Just the
50 to 75. But now there's, I mean, don't worry about bubonic plague. If you get it, what? There's antibiotics. Don't worry about it. So
everything will be fine.
Everything's fine.
Now, this comes from the Los Angeles Bureau of Tourism, which wants to invite you to come visit and climb one of their giant mounds of garbage today.
Exactly. And play with the rats, because the rats are there eating the giant piles of garbage, and they are carrying all these diseases, and they're fun to just play catch with.
Yeah,
you know, fetch, throw sticks for them, and they'll go get them. And
yeah, you forget that this is what life is like. I was in New York over the past week or so, and we did the show there for many years. You remember living?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, living near New York, but working in New York every day, and you just forget the what smell? It's like. The smell is a great thing. Yeah. Living in Texas, you forget the smell of New York. You go walk over a grate of the subway and you just remember, oh my God, I used to smell this every day.
Right.
But like walking down the street, rats just run by your feet. They just run by your feet. That's just part of your life. You just run. You got rats run by your feet. Now, giant rats that if one was in Texas, I mean, and they have creepy animals in Texas, but it's not like that when you're in a city environment. And then I also had the at the train station had the issue where guy is passed out, of course, on the floor. You don't even like recognize the guy, just passed out completely on the floor, homeless guy, just sleeping in the middle of like a walkway where everyone's just walking around him, and he's got his possessions strewn out around him. And another guy comes up and bends down and starts poking through his stuff and then takes a giant bag of Sour Patch Kids and just starts walking away with it. Now, you're stealing Sour Patch Kids from a homeless person. This is your life.
Wow, that's
and bad. Actually gets called out by some other guy. That's and my, I actually said something myself. Like, you got to put that back, dude. You can't. Look, there's a lot of things you can deal with in life.
Mm-hmm.
Someone stealing Sour Patch Kids from a homeless person, really, like,
kind of not cool.
It's not cool. And they got in this big,
as much as I like Sour Patch Kids,
yeah,
and, like, and I would be tempted.
If you're gonna steal something, that's probably your target. That,
but I probably wouldn't take them from a homeless guy,
right? And so, like, then you're in this like fight between this guy who's robbing a homeless person of Sour Patch Kids and some other guy who's walking through the train station just pissed off about it, and you realize that, like, this guy is just going to circle around and walk back and steal the Sour Patch Kids again when you walk away. And that's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just your normal everyday life in New York City. And in Los Angeles, it's apparently getting worse.
And do you see any maybe commonality between, let's say, Los Angeles, San Francisco, where there's the poop piles to by the hundreds of thousands.
Piles of poop.
And they've spent, I think it was... I just had the story, and I don't remember the exact figure. I think it was something like $50 million just this year trying to clean up poop piles.
This is also the place where the light post crashed down on top of someone's hood, and they later realized the reason it crashed down inexplicably because people had urinated on it so often it degraded the metal.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
it actually fell over on a car.
Oh, my God. I mean, that was in San Francisco?
Yeah, in San Francisco.
And then you got New York with the rats and the homeless. And let's see, is there anything in... Oh, that's right. They're all Democrat-led cities for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
Amazing. Does anybody else see the connection there to the policies of Democrats and how bad what situation these cities are all in,
which is incredible? I mean, you see this now, every city that's run by a leftist has these problems. We're now seeing the countries run by leftists, like Venezuela, completely collapsing around us, and we're like, hey, we should try socialism.
Yeah,
like, hey, that sounds like a great idea.
We do it really well, and socialism is good. It means equality. It means everybody's equally poor and equally starving to death, with no medical care and no jobs in Venezuela. So, yeah, if you want that here, I guess we could try it.
I mean, I'm not shocked that a group of people would run towards socialism, because it's a very human thing. You think, oh, well, someone's going to do things for me and then I don't have to do them and everything will be fine. Like, there's a lot of people who have fallen for that over the years. But to fall for that in America, which has basically disproved this entire analysis.
Yeah.
And secondarily, to fall for it in America right now, when all around the world,
when you have all the examples of how it fails.
Yeah. I mean, North Korea, you know, Venezuela,
Cuba,
Central America, there's a lot of different examples of this. I mean, the people who live in socialist governments in Central America are creating a crisis on our border because they want to come here so badly. And we're like, let's try their form of government.
It doesn't make any
insanity.
Sense.
Insanity.
It is.
It really is.
Pat and Stu for Glenn, 888-727-BECK. Joined by Jeffy of Chewing the Fat fame. You got a podcast called Chewing the Fat.
I do, as a matter of fact.
You can get that
amazing
wherever free podcasts are sold or whatever.
Yes, you can.
Did I get it right?
Absolutely. 100%
okay,
right.
Good.
I don't remember ever saying, but.
First of all. I want to get into this Ben Carson situation. Ben Carson at HUD.
The HUD director?
Yeah.
The main man?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not Surgeon General. He's
no. As you look it up, I'd also like you to get back to me, if you don't mind, to explain the disparity in REO rates. Do you know what an REO is?
An
Oreo.
R.
An Oreo.
Oreo.
Yeah, stop it for a second.
R-E-O.
Yeah, I know right what an there. Oreo is. It's a sandwich cookie. It's got chocolate. the sandwich is a cream filling. Sometimes it's double stuff. I know what an Oreo
different
is. Seasons, I eat them all the time.
Different seasons. They have different flavors come out.
Oh, you're saying an Oreo. Yes, I love their music. They were awesome in the early 80s. I love Oreo. They were really, really good.
Really good.
I Can't Fight That Feeling is one of my favorites. I used to call them Speedwagon, but if you want to call them REO, that's fine. All right.
And what is it? Real Estate Owned? Is that what it stands for?
Yes. She's about to explain, I think, but I think it is. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
REO.
Real Estate.
What's the O stand for?
The organization.
Oh, okay. Owned. Real Estate Owned. Stop it. That's what happens when a property goes to foreclosure.
So he does know.
We call it an REO.
Right?
I mean, that's the usually you don't have the balls to do that. That's like trying to quiz the guy and then stand by it. Because I mean, like, look, the purpose is not necessarily it's not to fix the problem. It's just to say Ben Carson shouldn't have this job, right? Like,
that's what that was about.
They're trying to do.
You're trying to embarrass him.
Yeah, trying to embarrass him.
Yeah,
which is really like not because obviously no matter what your expertise is, someone can pull out an abbreviation that's going to stump you. Like, it doesn't matter. Anybody could do that. You could come to us and say, you could start talking about, you know, situations with the transmitter towers at radio stations. And you know,
we're not going to know.
Does that matter? I mean, no, it doesn't.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't.
Who's up to dial in the Fenortner? You know what that is.
I do love Fenortners.
Fenortner. Yeah, it's at the transmitter towers.
Guy.
Yeah.
Fenortner, yeah. You.
Yeah, it's right there on the tower.
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know that about that. Then there's the ELO, right?
Yes.
You know what that is?
O stands for
electric. Light.
You know what the
organization?
Orchestra. Yeah.
I love it. And then she was so on bad. MSNBC. Katie Porter from California was on MSNBC talking about, you know, that he doesn't even know what his federal agency does. That FHA is there to help people in foreclosure. Like, wait.
Okay.
What? That's a new definition of FHA to me. I know they give out loans.
Yes, they do.
Okay. To low and moderate income people who are trying to buy a house, especially for a first time buyer. But are they there to help if you're not paying your mortgage? FHA?
They are if you were forced to take that loan out.
Well, a predatory lender made you take out that loan from the FHA. It's just bizarre. These Democrats that think that these government agencies are responsible for every aspect of our lives. Maybe you could show me where the FHA's mission statement is to help people in foreclosure. I've never seen that.
And it's a larger problem in that the government has prioritized giving money to people to buy homes in the first place. Like,
right.
That's not their business.
The FHA shouldn't even exist.
No, especially for that purpose. I mean, look, loans are something that you are not, it's not a present. It's not a present from a bank to get a loan.
But
it's a long-term financial requirement for you to pay more money than you get.
Student loans are looked at as a present now. And so are FHA loans.
Yeah, I got the loan.
You don't really have to pay anything to get it.
Yeah.
Well, wait. It's a loan. Maybe you recognize the word as not gift, but loan.
What's the O stand for?
Because we just vilify renting, right? We can make it seem like, oh, well, you haven't arrived in our society if you happen to rent where you live, which is, you know, this is a great example of...
Well, you're wasting all your... You're throwing your money
away. Because you're not throwing your money away on giant amounts of interest to banks for your loan that you bought, quote-unquote, bought your home with. You basically
really
haven't...
True.
I mean, you're just paying rent for the first 10 years of buying a house anyway. I mean, really, like, you're just... Like, I was looking at this the other day on my stupid mortgage. It's like, well, if I make another 10 years of payments, I still owe, like... 80% of the cost of the home.
That's the thing I was looking at too.
And like,
I can't remember for what purpose we were looking at our loan, but I noticed that the principal's not really going down
anywhere,
despite the massive mortgage payments I'm making. And it's like, how can I still own that much?
Because you were lucky enough to get a loan.
I was lucky enough to
get a loan. And
so they're charging me about triple what I took out in the loan.
Yeah,
it's literally. Double
At least. The fact that the government has created policies to tell people they should go out and enter into this arrangement is really questionable. I mean, you could certainly make an argument that buying a home is great, depending on what, you know, what your situation is. But the government should not be prioritizing owning over renting. And this is a great example of what happened, you know, even with Republicans when they have good intentions and create all sorts of government policies. Well, the ownership society, if people own their homes, you're going to care about them more and things are going to get better. It's like, well, what you did was create a gigantic financial crisis because of that, because of this theory. And the idea that you can, you know, look, I love, obviously, when it comes to tax time, everyone likes, you know, deducting their interest off of their mortgages. But I mean, like, that is something that is highly questionable, and I would say completely wrong.
That the government should be doing on that. There's been a years long jihad from Stu.
I will say it's true.
And the interest you can deduct from your home.
Because you're just saying, like, you know, it's a government making a giant, one of the biggest things the government does.
It helps save me every year.
It does. And it, of course,
every year.
Which is why, of course, you do it.
Right.
Why do people buy homes at numbers that they shouldn't even be buying above the amount of money they should be spending on a particular loan? Why do they do that? Well, the government tells them, they incentivize them massively to do it.
Yes.
They say, you don't have to pay your other taxes if you just take out this giant loan. Like, that is not a good policy.
That is the trade-off.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of.
I mean, it is.
I mean, we still pay him, but not as much.
Yeah.
Well, Ben Carson, you know, I mean, he does have a new suit and he's in charge of HUD, so it's good that he's in charge of everything, right? Because he was like almost like Beto going to find out about his turtle in the race. When he went
kinda
home,
disappoint.
When he dropped out of the race, when he dropped out of the race to go get a new suit, it was over.
Right? That's right. So, remember that? Mm-hmm. He left. I forget where they were on the campaign trail, but he went home to
go back to Florida to get
some
new
clothes.
Suit.
Like, wait, is there no store in Iowa? They don't have stores in Iowa.
Never forget that. No, because he's just gone after that.
Certainly not a Men's Warehouse in Iowa.
No, there's
anywhere,
no,
right?
There's no place to get clothes.
So, yeah, no wonder he went home. All right, what else you have?
Well, I know you were talking about the big robocall issue earlier, and people are already commenting online that they're concerned about me because they're saying that if Pat has four allegations pressed upon his name, they can't imagine how many allegations are pressed against mine.
Oh, my gosh,
you
that's
are correct.
A good point.
You are correct, and I am not going to comment on that, not one single bit.
It's got to be at least 400 allegations pressed on your name.
You do not want things pressed up on your name, no. Congratulations to Washington State, too, becoming the first state to legalize human composting. I'm excited about that. I don't know about you, but I mean, we need natural organic method of burying human remains so that you just become in the dirt.
Wow.
That's good news. Good news.
That is good news.
Listen, you just mix your body with a little wood chip and a little straw, and in a few weeks, you're dirt. Good to go.
And you're
plant
enhancing
some
the soil.
Yes, you are.
Great.
Yes, you are.
Daffodils will be growing.
Environmentally friendly.
Yeah. Well, it's Jay Inslee, by the way,
yes,
the governor of the state, who is on our board of 24 candidates now running for.
You don't seem to give him much of a chance, however. I'm a little perplexed by that, Stu. He's got some great programs.
Where is Inslee on this board?
Inslee is.
He's on the probably not category.
Probably not.
Yeah, so that's our fourth best category to be in out of the five categories.
There's front runners. They got a chance.
We need to move Pete Buttigieg up, man.
I did move him up, actually. He was in the probably not category. He's in the
maybe if everything goes right.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Buttigieg is everything's gone right so far.
Yeah,
so no
has.
One's questioned him at all about anything. No one said one terse word about him or any of his policies at some point.
No, the guy's practically perfect.
Right. At some point, this is going to change.
Practically perfect.
Yes,
first of all, he's a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Of at least one tour in the Afghanistan war.
Yeah.
He belongs to a protected group.
Mm-hmm. Rhodes Scholar.
He's got a Rhodes Scholar. He's a smart guy. He really is well-spoken. I think the guy
is
genuinely good
at
speeches.
He's a mayor of a major city.
South Bend, Indiana.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As major as it gets in that county.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So, but he's really well spoken. And when you ask him questions, he's good at not answering them in a smooth way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good politician.
Yeah. He's definitely. And this
people love his partner, husband.
Yeah.
So
do they? I
think they do.
I bet they probably do.
He's gotten really good press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has. He's gotten great press about that. And he's definitely part of the protected class of we're going to give you nothing but love.
Right.
And I do love. There's something I really adore about the idea that a guy, you know, look, South Bend, Indiana, is, you know, it's not the biggest town in the world. And he's the mayor of it. He gets to come in and he's the guy in like third place in this race. While de Blasio can't even get like a 10% approval rating from New York City. Like he's the mayor of New York City has no chance of winning. But the mayor of South Bend is like, he
could, that's a great
could
point. Do it.
I still don't think it's going to happen.
I hope not.
I would not think even the nomination, though. I don't think Buttigieg is going to be the nominee. But I mean, he has put himself in a position where you have to say he has a chance.
Far more than Beto. Beto is like done.
He's on the wrong side of things.
He's
right?
doing so badly now. They're not even doing opposition research on him anymore.
They've stopped.
Like, I'm not going to.
No.
We're not bothering with that anymore.
It's a waste of money. It is a waste of money.
It is.
Right? I mean, Pete had his town hall on Fox and went over huge. Beto just had one on CNN. Did you know about it?
Yesterday. Well, we had a clip because he was going to ban semi-automatic weapons, I think.
Yeah, which is
interesting. That's basically every gun. Right. Basically every gun. Right. I mean,
weapons of war cannot be on the streets.
Yeah, a semi-automatic weapon is not a weapon of war. I mean, it is used in war, as is everything else. Your fists and your hands are also used in war. I mean, that's such a dumbest, like, weapons of war. Like, every weapon, when you're in war, you'll throw a gun at, you'll throw a rock
anything,
at people.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's what happened. You're trying to win.
Yeah.
All watch Game of Thrones. You fight with anything you have.
Yeah. So, I mean, but when it comes to, like, a handgun, which most people would say is like a typical gun that an American would have.
But they're semi-automatic.
They're semi-automatic.
Many of them.
Yeah. So that's a big thing. And he's not making much of an impact. Though I will say it does occasionally happen where candidates have a rise and are prominent and then fall apart and come back. I mean, McCain was...
Yeah,
he had to fire his entire campaign staff at one point that campaign and wound up winning in 2008.
Pat and Stu with Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck program. All right. You got anything else from the Chew and the Fat file?
Absolutely. One big one that's coming across the pond here soon that's in Europe right now. The new viral challenge on the internet. Kissing cows. Kissing cows is going to be is the new viral challenge on the internet. Yes, kissing cows.
For what reason are people kissing cows?
Just to prove that you can do it on the internet. That's why I love the internet. I mean, it's just a viral challenge. Now, they're calling it. They need to rename it, actually. They call it the Ku Klux Challenge. That's too close to the Triple K Challenge.
Yeah,
you can't be doing that in Europe. That's
smart.
A bad name for a challenge.
What is the purpose of this?
It's just to prove that you can do it and kiss cows and prove that you can do it in Austria. Now, they're warning people that not to do it because the cows could attack you. If you if you were to come between mom and her babies, they could attack you. I'm looking forward.
What does a cow do when it attacks?
I've never seen a cow attack. I'm looking forward to cow attacks. To be honest with you, I want to see cow attacks.
Glenn has said this on the air that because he has this ranch where he is now, and like that was like they actually will come after you. They're pretty mean.
Yeah, they're mean. So I want to see that. I'm all for the
chew cut
challenge.
All day. That you probably wouldn't be very happy about it either.
No ice cream. It's like you say, can you at least give me a burger? And then they do. They just make you into a burger. And it's not a good. It's not the way that turns out. Is not positive.
No, it is not. Have you invested in your meatless meat? Your Impossible Foods? Yet?
I would have years ago. Unfortunately, it's a private company.
Right? I mean, now you're talking about it's going on. They're putting meatless sausage crumbles on Little Caesar's pizzas.
I'm very excited.
That stuff is amazing, though.
It is amazing.
It's amazing. And didn't you say there's a shortage again?
Yeah.
What restaurant was it that ran out of them?
Red Robin carries them.
Oh, Red Robin.
I mean, that's a big chain of restaurants.
And it's gone.
They're
from
gone
Red Robin?
For a week and a half, or they said a week and a half or 2 weeks, I think.
Oh my God.
According to the source of the waitress at Red Robin.
It's a deep source, inside source.
Whether she actually understands the Impossible Foods supply chain exactly was unclear.
Sounds like she's got a good handle on it.
She's got a good grip on it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. There's a real shortage of this stuff.
I like the... I mean, people are, chopping it up. I know they're going to have a problem with calling it meat, though. You know, they're having a big problem now that they can't call the...
Since there's no meat in it, you would think they would use the word meat.
Can't be using meat. And that's going to be a tough thing for them.
Yeah, they're fighting, and they're saying that that's not actually true. What's the definition, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, if you have the same chemical makeup as meat, but it just wasn't from an animal, is it meat?
Oh.
That's their argument, and it's an interesting one.
Yeah, sure is.
I mean, but... It is. I will say it tastes delicious. That's all I can say.
It does.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.